Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hey, Energy Matters listeners. I know it's been a minute, but me and Cody are back with a new episode for you, and we've waited for just the right guest. Today, we've got Irvin Laszlo on the show, and we're going to get into him in just a moment. It's so, so cool talking to him. But first of all, Cody, good to see you, buddy. It's been a while.
Good to see you, David. You look like you're on the road.
I am on the road. At the moment. And actually, I'm hiding out. I'm in your garage. You don't know that. It's good to be back.
It's possible.
Not far from you. And we got an email from Irvin Laszlo's publicist saying he'd come on the show. And I was like, all right, we've got to do whatever we can to make this happen. I would love to talk to him. Right before we get into that, real quick, if you guys are not on Cody and I's email list, we send out free classes and all sorts of cool updates. You can see all of our stuff on energymattersacademy.com. And let's jump into this. So Irvin Laszlo, he is a Hungarian philosopher of science, a systems theorist, integral theorist. He was originally a classical pianist. He started playing when he was 5 and doing concerts by the time he was 9. So he was a prodigy of sorts. And yes, he's an advocate of quantum consciousness. He's the author of over 100 books.
I was quite the writer, I was going to say, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Over 400 articles. He's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice, not once, but twice. And he's gotten a whole number of other awards. He lives on the top of a hill, as he put it, in Tuscany, Italy. And he was born in 1932. So he's been around for a while. He's got incredible experience, and he's got a really amazing view of the world that he shares with us today. I think we're all so lucky to get to talk and listen to him speak and read his books. And today we're talking about his new book called Reconnecting to the Source. And this book is really fascinating. He took all of the scientists and spiritual teachers and activists that I think are on the forefront of bringing science and spirituality together in the world today. And he had them each write a piece for the book on their own personal spiritual experiences and how they affected them and how it led to their careers or shifted their paradigm of seeing the world. Such a fascinating book. So we get into the book, we get into a bit of his life story, into consciousness, into philosophy, and into where we're going in the world with coronavirus and all the changes that are happening.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
Given the state of the world that we're in, he had some great things to say just about the step that we're in, maybe a way to look at it and think about it that could be a little more hopeful than it might feel on the day-to-day as a step forward. I found this to be a wonderful conversation with some really great insights into kind of how to look at the times we're in. And also to kind of set our energies looking forward to that evolutionary step. So that was a very wonderful conversation.
Yeah. Well, now we want to share it with you all. Thanks
yes.
for being here with us. Grab some popcorn, sit back, and relax. Let's jump into it. Irvin Laszlo. Welcome, Irvin Laszlo, to Energy Matters. It's such a pleasure to have you. Me and Cody have both read your book, Reconnecting to Source. We loved it. We'd love to start there and talk a bit about it and all of the amazing work you're doing and have done. Maybe we could just start by you, Irvin, sharing what the book is about and why you decided to write this. You've got, how many books do you have, by the way? About 70?
No, actually, it's more than that. If you count also books that I've edited, you know, then it's about 101, actually.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
But the books that I've written, a sole co-author, you know, or they are, I don't know, 35, 40, something like that. Because then I have co-authored books and edited books. You know, so.
Incredible. And so what was the impetus behind this one? Why reconnecting to source? Why get all of these amazing authors and researchers, scientists together to share their own spiritual experiences?
Well, there are two thoughts in the back of my mind that I wanted to bring out. One is that we do need somehow to find our way to a more natural form of existence. By natural, I don't mean only sort of biological, I mean cosmic practically, you know. I mean, what is natural for the universe? Somehow we seem to have got away from that. And we are still looking for ways in which we can recover what is we call the source, our way back to nature, to universe, to our origins. And so I thought this we should inquire into that. And then the second thought about this, about the methodology, is that maybe what is known as spiritual experience is a way to glimpse some of that source, you know, to enter into a somewhat altered state, a deeper meditation or mindfulness, or perhaps even it could be an aesthetic experience or a nature experience or any form of spiritual experience, and see if there is something coming forth which could indicate that it's not just a personal whim, it's not just a temporary fleeting thought that goes through my mind, through one's mind, but there is something which is actually grasping about the nature of reality in these deeper altered states. Many spiritual people claim that, of course, that they get closer to divinity or to the spirit or to whatever. So I wanted to see if how modern people respond to that. So the book grew out of that thought of inquiry, that question mark, can we reconnect to the source, to something closer to what we are, what we truly are and what our world is, by entering into a non-ordinary, a deeper state of consciousness.
Mm, beautiful. And you have, in this book, you've got Jane Goodall sharing her experiences with chimpanzees. You've got Barbara Marx Hubbard, Lynn McTaggart, who's actually been on this podcast, Dr. Dean Radin, Gary Schwartz, Deepak Chopra wrote the foreword, got Greg Braden on the front. You've got all of these incredible people, Irvin, sharing their spiritual experiences. Is there an underlying theme that you found talking to them or reading what they wrote about their own experiences that kind of conform to your theories on evolution and consciousness?
Now, I didn't suggest anything to them. I just asked a simple question. Did you have any experience that has changed your mind or changed your life, actually, changed your existence? And to my surprise, these people have all replied, yes, there was something which made them what they are today. And that was an experience that was not a planned, self-rational experience, but something that happened. And because I've had experiences like this while I was a musician, you know, in my younger days, I was a concert pianist. And while I was playing especially for a public, and everything is working beautifully, then one enters into another sphere, another domain, another dimension. And that changed a lot of my thinking, and that prompted me to set out on the field of inquiry of through science and to who we are and what the world is. So I asked them, would you have such an experience? They said yes, and I just simply asked, would you describe it? You tell us what it is. And then we recorded these descriptions, and that makes up what in this book called the bouquet of spiritual experiences. It's very interesting because all these people had these experiences. They're very rational people. Of course, they are deeply emotional and sensitive people as well, but they are not the flighty people who are just sort of giving to flights of imagination. They actually underwent these experiences. They were surprised by it, and it changed their life. So then the question is, does this tell us something about who we are and what the world is?
Hmm. I know Cody has a lot of questions for you too, but just one more follow-up with that, Irvin. Can you go a little deeper into your own spiritual experience or awakening that happened to you when you were playing the piano?
Well, it's something that kept happening. It was not a single experience, but it was an experience that repeated itself. When things were flowing, when they have this flow experience, as Jeek Csikszentmihalyi, the psychologist, calls it, then things start moving. And it's an experience that I've had since my early childhood, when I started playing concerts when I was 9 years old. And on concerts, it happens. And even when I'm playing sometimes for myself and nobody's hearing it, but I feel that everything is just falling together beautifully. And it kept continuing to happen when I was starting to write and ask questions about, you know, about these deeper questions and what science can tell us about them. And when the answers are coming, they are not entirely coming from, not fully from me as a person. They seem to be flowing in, and I just try to transcribe it. And this is the experience that continues to happen to me. It is when I start working on a theme and I feel that somehow now it's beginning to make sense, then always the next things that I have to say or write is flowing, is coming. Sometimes it's mind-blowing, and sometimes it's very difficult because it costs a lot of energy expenditure, concentration, keeping yourself in that level of concentration. And so sometimes it's not voluntary. I mean, sometimes I say, now I'd like to go for a walk already, you know, but it keeps coming. And then I feel that I should commit it to paper. So of course, then I don't just write down anything that comes. I try to look at it with a scientific, with a deeper background knowledge in mind. Is this possible? Does it make sense? And then the result is, out of this mixture comes the books, the ideas that I've written. I should say that the way this operated in my childhood and in my teens and also my 20s, well, including my 20s. I got married when I was 25, and I lived with my wife, who's a Finnish-born Swedish girl. We lived in Switzerland and up in the hills. And I had a grand piano brought in there, and next to the piano was a little table with a portable typewriter on it, because there were no personal computers at the time. So I would play the piano, and when things would go well and I would prepare for concerts, and if something seems to happening, I could allow my mind to float freely. And out of that, I tried to catch some key ideas. And after a moment, I would stand up, walk over 5 steps to the desk with the little Remington typewriter, and start banging it out, the idea that I had. Of course, then I would revise it, but not the basic concept, just the way it's expressed. And this is how the books somehow wrote themselves. I didn't intend to write them for anybody or for publication. I wrote them down because I saw there was something interesting and valuable happening, and I wanted to know if I could preserve some the gist of it, you know, what it really was. Mm-hmm. So it was accidental that they got published, and that I sort of shifted from the world of music into the world of the academic world and science and philosophy.
Incredible.
So I have a kind of a follow-on to that as well, Irvin. Yes. In all of these different experiences, or many of these different spiritual experiences, they kind of happen in maybe an altered state of awareness or consciousness. And I think our go-to to help someone kind of open up to that altered state of consciousness is like meditation. That's kind of a big thing that David and I promote and teach and work with. But do you see a thread through all these different stories and your own experiences, like some way to help people kind of connect with or recognize when they're starting to move into that altered experience that ultimately we could call spiritual? Because in my experience of working with people and teaching them, many times a lot of people are having these experiences, but they don't recognize them. They're mm-hmm. kind of not validated as real, or they aren't kind of brought into consciousness where we could kind of understand them and go a little deeper. It's like when David and I teach kind of energy awareness or meditative awareness, and people start to connect with some of the things that happen in that state, they suddenly make all these links and go, well, I've had this happen throughout my life, but I was always told it was my imagination, or I was crazy, or I'm not, you know, somehow not kind of seeing the world correctly. And it seems like we're in a step right now where we're really needing to see the world differently to kind of make it through this time. Do you have a way to encourage people to kind of find that spiritual side of themselves or connect to that altered
allowing
perception?
Giving credibility to what's happening to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're being told, are using most of a rational mind, the left hemispheric everyday consciousness, and then we just think this is illusion, this is just fantasy. So the first step, I suppose, is probably your experience as well, is not to dismiss them. These experiences can come to you in altered states, and then in normal states, sometimes they disappear then, unless you make a point of trying to remember. But don't dismiss them, because we are, as a new paradigm in science, is from the quantum physics and quantum cosmology and the new biology and all that, we are not mechanical sort of bits and pieces of matter floating about in space and time. We are highly connected, interacting information and energy-based entities. I say, what is the basis of this reality? It's informed energy. It's energy, as you're working with it. It's something, energy, which is not just passive energy, mechanical energy, but there is information in it. And that information is what makes the difference between a flat universe and impassive and impersonal universe that is just a heap of things and without rhyme or reason, and a universe that is evolving, that is self-evolving, that has a drive, a motivation, something which you make resembling a spirit or a life of its own. And this gets very close to theology and to sorry, speculative domains, but I try to think these things through, and I've come to the conclusion that there must be something like this in the universe. Otherwise, the probability of hitting on the kind of complex and integrated and coherent systems that we are and that we find around us, the probability would be practically nil. Fred Hoyle, the great astronomer, said the probability of random mixing of a DNA creating a livable species, a viable species, is like having a hurricane blowing through a scrapyard and assembling a working airplane. I mean, we can't exclude the probability, but it doesn't seem particularly high. So you see, I think once we credibilize on, so to speak, our own experiences, then we can go deeper and allow these things to unfold. Because when we allow them, something remarkable is coming forth, something which is more than chance, and which I can really just best identify with this popular word today, but I'm sure you find them in your work and experience as well. The sense of belonging, the sense of being one, a sense of evolving together and being connected by as a feeling and a sense which is more than just prompted by one's selfish interests. It's really an unrequited and a love that is not conditional, unconditional love. You know, it's not something for a quid pro quo, but in this is something that has come forth in those 18 or 19 experiences that I describe in this book. everybody, no matter how different they were, and they were not told anything about the kind of conclusions the others reach. Nobody knew who the others are. They just thought of their own, try to recollect what happened to them. Why are they what they are today? And the results is, the outcome is surprisingly remarkable, similar, no matter whether it is a scientist or a poet or a religious or spiritual person or whatever, or even an everyday business person, you know. The experience is one of this unconditional love, you know. It's strange. And so I come to feel that if there is a spirit, a deeper motivation in the universe, it must be that motivation, which already Max Planck, the great physicist, said, that there must be a spirit in the universe to explain how come that the nucleus of the atom, the protons and the neutrons, how can they hold together? How can they actually join together and then create stable atoms? And how can these create molecules and so on? Not by chance, as Fred Hoyle is right, you know, chance is so astronomically improbable that in the given time, since the birth of the universe, probably in the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years ago, that these complex entities would have emerged, is the probability is next to nil. So something is behind it, and that something must be in us too. And that was the major hypothesis. This kind of connecting spirit, the holotropism, I call it, a sense, a movement toward wholeness, which is there in the nucleus of the atom, which is there in every living system, which is there in the solar system and in the galaxy. And this is a wholeness-oriented, evolving universe. And that same spirit is in us, and with an altered state of consciousness, we can find it. I should add, of course, in past times, it could be a normal state, but now the normal state is so superficial and matter-of-factness and really just dealing with the everyday reality and not going deeper. So we practically have to go into a non-ordinary state, whereas indigenous people very often live in that state, you know, in that higher, as you well know. So I find that in us is the secret of who we are and who the world is, because we are what the world is. How the world evolves is how we feel in our deepest depths of our consciousness. That is by my finding, and that is what was my motivating question, and this is what is confirmed in this book. The rest of the book, I just tried to provide a meaningful explanation for this, based on the new quantum sciences. This is not need to be just a chimera of the imagination. It could be something really, really true. And I think it is.
Yes, beautiful. So that deep level of disconnection that we find ourselves in as a society or as a whole, it seems like with all of this upheaval and everything that's happening, there's a lot of the things that have disconnected us are kind of coming to consciousness, or maybe the things that keep us disconnected from each other as well. And so there's kind of two thoughts, and maybe you can speak to this. One, I love your kind of explanation of coming back to the self, and it seems like reconnecting with source really speaks to also reconnecting with the deepest sense of who we are, deepest sense of self. I don't know if you see it in that way. But my other question would be, given the extreme kind of change we're in and the extreme chaos or volatility, is there a way to see, like, what would be the bigger way to maybe look at the shift and the system that might help people find a little bit more of a hopeful view about making it through this time, as an evolutionary step, perhaps, or as a healing? I'm not sure even what to call it, but maybe you have some thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, the basic insight is that for truly fundamental change to occur, the currently dominant system has to be disrupted, has to be destabilized in some way. And this civilization is occurring now. And this, therefore, there is an element here which is hopeful, that we don't need to remain the way we are, or be the way we were. There is an alternative to moving ahead. And the big problem, the big question mark is on my mind, and I've been working on this topic, in fact, is which way do we go? Back or forward? Do we try to reestablish the old system? Those who had over in a uniquely privileged position, situation in the past system, they would like to obviously to get back to it. But the majority of humankind was very crisis prone and disenfranchised. And I think there's a readiness to explore alternatives. The main thing is to find the look at the crisis. It's not just as danger, but as opportunity. Probably as the minimum necessary opportunity for fundamental change to occur. Now, this change can occur in our lifetime. This kind of bifurcation, global shifts in the past have taken hundreds of years to penetrate through into the people's consciousness, people's way of existence has changed, of course, all along. But it was a relatively slow change. The individual didn't really feel that change. Now we feel it because practically from day to day, we are experiencing shocks and crises and new challenges. And now the idea is, now the great challenge is now to look at ourselves as not in the throes of danger and the throes of fate coming apart, but as a possibility, having a possibility of coming together, of creating a higher level system, an integral system which has coherence. To me, the key term is coherence, which is felt as love, experienced as such, or as oneness. But what it is described in sort of scientific terms is the coherence of the elements of systems within the whole system, and then the coherence of that whole system with its environment. In nature, well-functioning systems are coherent. And this kind of internal and external coherence and its highest level is what you can describe as supercoherence. But what we should be aiming for is a coherence within our body, because when we have that, that's the name for that is health. When the coherent, when the body is incoherent, then it's diseased. Now, when we are incoherent with the rest of the world, then we are alienated, then we are left by ourselves, then we're making mistakes, then we are destroying our environment and others around us. When we are coherent with the others around us, then we are part of this evolutionary process of leading to higher levels of unity, of union, of oneness, of belongingness. And so that the great challenge here is seek coherence, find coherence. Before, I talked about this for some years now, but before it was a far out idea. How do we get past today's entrenched systems of values and behaviors? Now we have been kicked out of that, out of the entrenched world. So let's move forward and not backwards. And this is the unique chance we have. And the leading principle is that sense of being coherent with the world around us, reestablishing a coherence, which is the true norm of our existence. The norm is not economic growth or even some form of saving some aspect of the environment. All that is necessary is good. But the real norm is being one, being coherent within us and between us and among us. And that is simply the message that I derive from these experiences. Because people, when they enter these deeper states, they feel themselves in being in that state of coherence, of the state of harmony. By the way, the Eastern philosophies, even in a very practical sense, even in China and Japan and Vietnam, everywhere, are talking about harmony. Harmony as being the key principle of life or of existence, which is really another way of expressing what I call coherence. Coherence meaning that every part of the system is tuned with every other part, and together they work and create the system, and the system within system and within system, until we get the whole biosphere as a coherent system. So this is a realization that we can have. And if we do, then we'll find a way to move out of the crisis, not back, but forward. That's the challenge.
Are you an optimist, Irvin? Do you believe we will get through this and humanity will evolve, or will we destroy ourselves?
I don't see how.
It's a big either or.
Destroy ourselves. We are endowed with this consciousness, which is capable of asking these questions that you're asking here, that I'm asking, that these questions that I ask these people in the book. And we are capable of grasping something about who we are. And so this is not a mechanical world running down, as in the old classical mechanics it was thought. It's a world that is evolving, that is running up. That's the difference between the classical mechanics and the quantum physics. One is an evolving ensemble, seamless ensemble beyond space and time of elements that are really waves or vibrations and not bits and pieces of dead matter. And the other one, which is really just sort of matter. But even Newton said that matter in itself that he talked about is not the deepest reality. There is a deeper reality behind it. And then people like Einstein and Planck and Schrödinger and all that, they are talking very clearly. There is no such thing as dead, inert matter. We are all infused with energy and with information. And if we discover that, we have to discover the way we can make best use of that, not just for our own short-term ends, but really for the ensemble, for the coherence, for the oneness of the world that we constitute with others around us.
It's beautiful. Thank you, Irvin. And I know we're about out of time here, but I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for your contribution to humanity. You've lived an incredible life. You've been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice, and I think that you've made an amazing impact on this planet. And I hope everybody listening, if you get a chance, pick up this book. I've read it. It's amazing, Reconnecting to Source. The New Science of Spiritual Experience, and maybe pick up the other 100 books that Irvin has written. And I'm just going to tease that, Irvin, you're working on another one right now. I don't know if you're allowed to say what it's about yet, but
it should be published next week, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
very this is so much on the internet. It'll be called Global Shift Now, A Call to Evolution. That is its title and subtitle, you see. It is what we've been talking about. Taking the opportunity, making use of the opportunity of a disruption of the system to move forward, to evolve rather than to devolve.
You're a disruptor.
Well, we are being disrupted.
Yes.
Just use it to the best advantage.
And disruption, good kind of disruptions can lead to a higher level of coherence is what I've been hearing you say.
It must.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Linear piecemeal processes are too small, too slow, and too much exposed to chance, to all kinds of interactions, to lead us to a fundamentally better and more coherent world. But together, when we are looking into ourselves and finding our true consciousness and finding who we truly are, then we can start creating different policies, different economic systems, social systems, a different relationship to our ecology, all of them, seeing the relationship between science and spirituality, all of those sort of things are in the air, all available. It's up to us to really to wake up and grasp this opportunity. It's a splendid, almost unique opportunity. It's, I would say, this pandemic, strange to say, but it's a blessing in disguise.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Brought so many things to the surface. Yeah.
Thank you, Irvin. Irvin Laszlo, everyone, thanks for being here with us on Energy Matters. Pick up the book, Reconnecting to Source, and Reconnecting to the Source, excuse me. And Irvin, really appreciate your time. Enjoy yourself in Tuscany, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Very good. Energy does indeed matter.
Yes.
I'm glad that you're dealing with that. Wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks, Irvin.
See you.
Thank you so much, Irvin. Can't wait for your next book.
Yeah, thanks, Irvin. Have a great evening. Enjoy Italy. Talk soon. We'll send it to you when it's out.
Thank you so much.
Make sure you send it to Sarah so we can use this.
We will. We will. Thank you, my friend. Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters Podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud.com.